Welcome to another episode of The Final Block. I'm your host, Chris Barry, GB Performance Analyst, and I'm joined once again by Denny Roberts. How you doing, Denny?
How you doing, Chris? You all right?
Not too bad, mate. Thanks. Not too bad. You good?
Good, mate.
Good stuff. We're also lucky enough this week to be joined by Denny's colleague in the Elite Development Squad, Colin Oates. Hello, Col.
Hi, Chris. Hi, Denny. How are you two?
All good, mate. Thank you. You good?
Yeah, not too bad at all.
You've got a bit of a challenge set for yourself this weekend coming up, haven't you?
Yeah. My marathon, 26.2-mile marathon. I've done about 20 runs, though, so I think I'm well prepared for it.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Let's hope so, mate. Right, Carl, so your role in the EDS alongside Denny is largely the junior athletes and then some of the transition athletes, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so we've been we initially was just working with the under 21 age group, but we identified a kind of little bit of a gap between how they transition from the juniors into the seniors, and sometimes the step for some of them, not all of them, but some of them is a little bit of a big step. So we got tasked with coaching some of the transitional players that move through into seniors. Some of them are ready to step onto the senior stage and obviously go and excel, but in this current kind of situation, the build up to the games, obviously before coronavirus, there was kind of a little bit of a gap for some of them. So that's where we kind of been brought in to look after some of those guys as well.
Good stuff. So the main topic of this discussion is going to be a bit about your experiences of competing in a European Championship final and then also coaching in a junior European Championship final. So I think the way to start really is to talk about how it feels to fight in one, because not many people get that opportunity, and so you're one of the lucky ones that's actually had that experience. So what's it like to fight in a European final?
I think fighting in the final was a great privilege, obviously, that I earned through the way I competed on the day, but also I think for me personally, there was a problem with that. It was not as nerve-wracking a final as it maybe should be, because obviously when you walk into a final, you should have that, like I always would do, have that onward desire to win it. But being in a final, sometimes you're a bit more relaxed because you're into a position where you've got a fight and you know you're going to get a medal. So, but for the most part, it was probably not as tense as maybe I would have liked it to have been. I suppose that's the way to put it. You sometimes think that you should be more on edge because you've got a chance to be a European champion. And I definitely put everything into the final, but just a slightly different feeling.
So, Cole, take for instance, you're in the tunnel. You're about to go out, about to compete in that final. What are your thoughts? What are your feelings at that moment? And what's the coach saying to you at that point?
Yeah, I always had a really good process delivered to me by a psychologist that we have, a sports psychologist we have at British Judo, Andrew Cruikshank, about the prep funnel in terms of how do I feel in the start of the day? How do I feel through warm-up? How do I feel and what am I thinking going into the tunnel? When I got into the tunnel, everything became really narrow. It was like a really narrow focus. So at that point was when I was kind of trying to bring everything down to one key point, one key ideal that would help me win the match or ultimately get me to win the match. So I always really started, like I started quite wide with my thought process. And as I started to go through the tunnel, getting along, and it was the same message from the coach as it was in my own head. The coach was to go, right, okay, you're in the tunnel now. How are you going to win this match? What is it that you're going to do that's going to win this match? And he knew the key point himself because we've been talking about it. and it'd reinforce it. So that's kind of where I was at in my headspace. And I wanted to just be really clear. If I delivered that first exchange, second exchange, third exchange, I could win the match.
So for you, having that sort of clear focus and not sort of drifting into what you would describe as like a broad messaging, you prefer to have a narrow focus and just have one sort of key point to go into the fight with?
Yeah, definitely towards the end of my career. So when you talk about Europeans, 2016, I was 32, that my last Europeans when I got to the final. And maybe earlier on in my career, I had sometimes two or three things going through my head in the tunnel. And that worked for a period of time until it became really obvious what my key strengths were. What my key strengths were meant I could win the match. So it was really important that I got to that point where I could get narrowed down. And it was like a really good way of describing this. I don't know if it's a really good way of describing it or not, actually, but I'll talk it through. When I went into London in 2012, when I competed there, there was one of the best matches I ever fought in my career was against the Mongolian. And at that point, I'd gone through the tunnel, got to the point where I was stood waiting to come on the mat. And there was a load of, obviously, the noise was deafening in London. It was absolutely ridiculous. And it was almost like you wouldn't be able to hear your own thoughts. It was that. But there was a point when it was like a complete equilibrium in my physical being, in my mental state, that I was really clear, almost like really clear on what I was going to do and what I needed to do to win that match. And at that point, I kind of felt like I was going to win the match. It was like I knew I was going to win the match, whereas I was probably massively outsider. I think the bookies odds on it was 10-1. I'm pretty certain someone won money off me, and that's what the odds were. So you show how big an outsider I was, but there was a moment of real clarity. So when you come back into the Europeans, it's the same thing, really clear clarity of what am I going to deliver.
Okay, so you've got your prep final, just what you're thinking and what you're feeling at that point, and you've got your focus of what the fight is. So you're in the fight now. Talk us a little bit through the fight and what happened, and again, what your thoughts and feelings are during the contest.
Yeah, so I rewatched the fight the other day because I knew I was coming on to do this, and I knew I was going to be catching up. So I thought I'd rewatch the fight just to give myself kind of like a reminder. And it brings back really like strong feelings of missed opportunity within the fight. And I don't know if I felt it in the fight, but what was really obvious coming back, and it's something that on reflection is why I changed the way I coach, in that there was so much where I didn't take the risk that I needed to do. And earlier in the day, I remember taking risks on things and going after things and things where I, you know, taking that little bit of a risk. And we talk about risk, it's calculated risk, like risk assessors. Judo's like a risk assessment. How do I get the best out of that risk? And sometimes I've played way too safe on the cautious side of risk, winning fights on penalties. You know, ultimately, it's what cost me in my last Olympics at Rio, was just trying to play the penalty game. And people would moan about the referee and say, oh, it's the referee. And it actually wasn't the referee. And it was my decision making. Not taking risks meant that I let it into the referee's hands. In the European final, it was really similar. Like when he scored, he turned, he went big, he took a risk, and he threw me because of it. I went and turned and attacked, but within myself, I was holding myself back. And I remember walking off thinking of a missed opportunity rather than claiming a silver. It was a bit frustrating.
Yeah, I can imagine that being a very frustrating feeling like you haven't necessarily done everything you could to win the contest. So what were the lessons really that you learned to take into your coaching career from that?
Yeah, it's one of the key lessons I probably think about. And it's one of the ways me and Denny work really closely on the EDS, and we've talked about it quite a lot, probably more so this year, about taking risks and going after people. When we talk about taking risks, we don't mean with abandonment. We don't mean just, oh, I'll just try something, knowing that it's got no chance of working. But it was a big risk, and I took a risk, and I'm happy with that. It's more about when you see an opportunity and you've got confidence in the opportunity, you have to go with it 100%. And I think the real top athletes do it. You can watch someone, and Zanaria is one of the best to watch, always goes forwards, always tries to lead with his first hand on, always steps in and takes a risk. Now, he's got a fail safe in his risk taking, in that he's so gymnastic that he can get off so much stuff. But he gets that from having created a career of constantly pressing, constantly going forwards, constantly going after his opponent, that means that he can take those risks, knowing that he's got such good feeling awareness, he can escape it. And it's what we try and drive a little bit with some of the young athletes we work with, because, you know, essentially I was set up as a good gripper. I could grip very well, but you can hide behind your gripping. You can hide behind that. So we try, I try not to bring that hiding behind the grip. We always try and coach in a way where it's all about a staged approach. How do you start the fight? And we look at going forwards. How do you lead the grip in? How do you then throw? And then if you don't throw, how do you win in Iwata? So, and then we have contest management. But contest management is our other trademark, comes in at the back end of everything. We set our athletes out. How do they get to the point where they can take maximum risk with maximum chance of success? If that makes sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, you've got that trade-off between making sure you're getting things right and doing things properly, but then equally you're trying to encourage that just opportunism as well. When you feel like there's a chance there, to just absolutely go for it. And you said yourself that you maybe found that at times you got a bit too conservative, and even though you knew that you would win most of the gripping exchanges, it didn't necessarily win you the fight. I think in the previous episode of this podcast, we spoke to Kate, and Kate rued that one missed opportunity in the Olympic final for the arm lock, where it just slipped out of her grasp. She was going for it, but she said she maybe rushed it. She didn't follow her technique fully. So that's one person really going for it, but missing the technique, whereas you were maybe describing getting all your technique bang on, but maybe not quite committing.
Yeah, definitely around, like, we bang on about commitment. It's funny, if people watch me, they'd probably go, you're safe, like, in terms of sumo gauge is very safe. There's a lot of safe techniques in my armory in terms of how I compete. But it all stems around, like, some mindset, and everything about my mindset is keep going, keep pushing, keep going, keep pushing. But to do that, you tend to border on safe, and of course it wins you some things, but for my career it definitely meant that on a given day I could probably beat one or two world-class players. To win an Olympic medal, you need to win four or five fights like that, and that's why I was never an Olympic medalist. I wasn't good enough on a day to beat four or five world-class players. I won a Grand Slam, I won Grand Slam medals, because on those days draws fell certain ways, pathways opened up, and I beat one or two world-class players. My best day would have probably been Baku, where I probably beat three on that day, I would have said. But in terms of, that was probably the only time in my career that happened. So it's like really trying to get the balance between the athletes still being in a match, because that's what I like to think about, but also when they spot the opportunity, go after it, go after it, go after it.
Yeah, so Cole, as you've moved from being an athlete into a coaching role, what are your, like, massive sort of takeaways from being an athlete that you really sort of embed down into how you coach now and how you want to develop athletes yourself?
I think for me, as a transition from an athlete to coach, is quite challenging, because I'm the type of athlete that feels that I needed control of what I was doing, control of my program. I needed to have the why. I needed to have the why. So I wouldn't really follow orders blindly. I'm not very good at that. I didn't sit well with coaches who wanted to just tell me how to be, and this is what you need to do, and then not tell me why. They just said, oh, it's the right thing. Just listen to me and do it. So what's interesting about that is that I then appreciate that that's not how I want to be coached. So then I think that everyone must be like me. No one wants to just be told. There's a plethora of athletes that like that kind of direct information. There's others like me who need the why. And so the challenge for me is understanding those different characters as you go, not judging everyone how I would want to be coached, because otherwise I might be just constantly offering the why and there's a bunch of players that don't want the why. I think ultimately, as your journey progresses, I think every athlete who really reaches the top, I think, to some degree, they need to have the why. I still believe that. I still think that's why using open questions to bring the answers out of the athletes really important, as opposed to just me telling them all the time. And I think at some stages, what I didn't understand is that sometimes they don't have no idea of the why. And actually, I need to be a bit more directive. So it's been really tricky getting that balance. And I think that it's really easy. It's worse with male athletes and female athletes because I'm a male. So I judge them the way I would feel. So it's been a challenge, that side.
What is like a massive thing that you thought, okay, that's what coaching's like as from an athlete perspective, and what's changed about that? So like, if you thought, oh, I'm going into coaching now, it's going to be like this, and actually the reality of it is this, and is there anything massive or anything that stands out for you that your perception of it before you started has changed?
I think the work behind the scenes is, my perception wasn't work. The work behind the scenes that every coach does, you didn't see as an athlete. Every meeting they had, every little thing that, when I was an athlete, I thought, like, just make that decision. It's a simple decision-making. Change it. Change that decision. It's easy. And then when I start to be in coaching, realizing that there's so many different factors that fall behind why decision-making can't be changed or why things can't happen. But in terms of, like, on the mat, I didn't understand quite why some coaches would choose a certain method of coaching. I think that's the bit I don't understand. Like, I'd look at it, and I used to also think, like, coaching was so different for me. Coaching was a bit like what I talked about there, about I can show someone a piece of magical information. They'd go, oh, that's a great point. And they'd go, oh, brilliant. I'll take that for my judo and I'll go be world champion with it. I kind of like that fluffy kind of, when I was a player, I did it sometimes with athletes. I'd go to up athletes and I'd talk to them through stuff. And I think, oh, I know exactly how to cure that technique. Or know exactly how to deliver that bit of judo for them. And I'll give it to them and they'll go, brilliant. It's all clicked. I know exactly what I'm doing. Wonderful. So I'm realizing that coaching wasn't so much about instructing like that. It was more like a journey, and that you see something that needs to be changed. It don't get changed in that moment. You have to work at it and work at it and work at it and find the way that it connects to the athlete that you're working with. So me just upping up and thinking, oh, great, I'll show you this. Perfect cure. That changed a lot when I see the difference between athlete and coach.
Yeah, I've had conversations with people in the past about this. I think it was at a coaching seminar of some description, and somebody described skill, and skill is something we maybe establish with being able to do something. But the way he put it was not so much that you were just able to do it blankly. You had to be able to apply that skill depending on what the context of the situation required and make it work. So like, that's interesting the way you put that as well. It's like the magic piece of information might be perfect in one set of context, one set of circumstances, but won't apply in others. And so that's where I think your concept of the why comes from. If you understand the principles of something, then you're able to apply it in different situations rather than the situation you've seen it once demonstrated in.
Yeah, completely, 100%. And, you know, I've done a lot of stuff. Like, since I've become a coach, like, I didn't, you know, you have to remember something about coaching, and that when you realize those kind of things, you don't become a coach overnight. Like, you're not a great judo player or a player who's had some success as an athlete, as a fighter, and then you go into coaching and suddenly you can just teach everyone judo. That's not coaching, that's teaching judo. That's instructing, that's just showing people lovely bits of judo. Being a coach is something massively different. And I think there's a real struggle sometimes to understand the difference between a judo fighter who can show their wonderful judo and a judo coach who has to take you on a journey through to your career. So I've done the athlete to coach course through UK Sport, and through the whole course, it's like learning about how to coach and develop an athlete over a period of time, not popping in. Like, so now when I coach, some people think, you know, we have a big team on the EDS. Sometimes we have semi-centralized, not just external. But I think maybe sometimes it comes across as lazy, that an athlete will ask you some advice or they're looking for some help and you don't give it. I think in those moments, it's not laziness, it's identifying that I can be as much a help as a hindrance. Because I spot that one situation you're talking about, Chris. One situation, I think, that's perfect. Actually, it's so multifaceted. They need it in different scenarios. And let's have the time to spend with them to do that. The one piece of information I give them is almost can be a blocker to their success on that pathway of a technique or a journey.
Yeah, I agree. I think every single coach has gone around and give that magical bit of advice or that sort of beautiful bit of movement that they've done, and you've gone, okay, yeah, that's going to fix their judo. But yeah, I agree on the journey that I've come through as well, that old saying and that old sort of motto of like, every time you tell someone something, you take away that opportunity for them to learn. And what you're saying there, I think, really sort of applies that on a sort of day-to-day basis, that it's good that you know that technique and you've been on that journey to understand it and understand the principles of it, but it's now about them going on that journey and you're there as a facilitator to help sort of them guide and learn it how you have done and the best way that you see that fitting in their sort of judo and their journey. So you've been coaching a while at the center. Now you've traveled all over. You're getting a good amount of success. You're coming into the European Championships, Junior European Championships. Tell us about that. You've got Kelly Peterson Pollard. She's world number one at this point.
Yeah, I think she was seeded one. I'm not sure she was world number one at that point. There's a few continentals that might have been a little bit higher, but she was seeded one.
She's been winning like a plenty of European Cups that year. She's had a good year. So drawing on your experience as an athlete going into a European Championships and then you're taking an athlete into European Championships, how does that feel as a coach? How does that sort of help you?
I mean, there's a really fascinating contrast in here in Coach Kelly at the Europeans and me going into the Europeans. So give you a little bit of context. Me going into the Europeans in 2016, I was 32. I was getting older. I was getting slower. I was really struggling with my weight at that point, and I was really struggling with my motivation. There's a couple of coaches that will know this really well, that I was on the verge of probably quitting at the eight, at the, what, 6 months out from the games. I was thinking about quitting. I went into Paris Grand Slam. At the time, I felt like I'd lost to a small nation player, and it was a poor result. Looking back, Djokova, who's now gone on to do massive amount of stuff in the sport, it wasn't as bad a loss as I felt, but at the time it felt like rock bottom. Not because he wasn't a good judo player, that's not fair. He was always a good judo player and he always had the ability to win, but I felt like the place I was in with the experience and the age I had, I should have gone on to be more successful. It's something that I used a lot in my career, like, oh, you should have beaten them. I've got to the point where it was like, talking with the psychologist, it was around like, you could win. If you delivered your best and you did what you can and delivered your best judo, you could win. But no one has a God-given right to win. Just because you're from a different, bigger nation, just because you're older, just because you've won more than this person, doesn't give you a God-given right, especially in a sport like judo. So I had to move my brain away from that. But at that point, I kind of talked to a couple of coaches and I kind of said I didn't really want to carry on. So the conversation kind of ended with like giving me an open book to what I wanted to do. And the question was whether not to compete and just go to Rio on the back of nothing, whether not to train and go off the back of nothing. I'd already qualified. And obviously I came around to the idea, like I went to Brazil and I had, one of the things that brought me back in was a great experience in Brazil. And we ran it recently at the center. Denny ran, you know, ran a brilliant session with this on the, we did two 15 minute contests and they were like a journey. 15 minute fights like a journey. Like you went through the whole range of emotions. At the back end of the two 15 minute fights with two Brazilian lads, it made me feel so much better about judo. I don't even know why. I can't really put my finger on that bit. It's really interesting. But yeah, running into the Europeans probably was slightly different for me and slightly different for Kelly. I was going to the Europeans on the back of just trying to enjoy judo, wanting to be fun, no pressure. I was the underdog. Never really expected probably to medal, not in myself really. I just wanted to enjoy the day. And all the way through my career, and I said this on an interview recently, or that got released recently, about our greatest achievements came just after the temptation to quit was greatest. And there's a great quote around that, like, the temptation to quit is greatest just before you succeed. And I love that quote because it epitomized my career. But yeah, there was a massive difference point going in that I had little to no pressure. She had massive pressure.
On the day leading up, on the sort of weeks leading up to that event, it was the first sort of major event that the EDS program had as a sort of, because it was a new program at that point. You're very much a leader of that program, and this is your idea, your program, your sort of periodization into this. How did that feel? Was that any added pressure, or was you just taking that in your stride? Or
I think we did something like, I mean, you know yourself anyway, Dan, with me and the way we laid it out. You know what? We, on the day, didn't, if there was pressure, we either hit it really well, or we didn't feel it, or we didn't let it change the day. The day felt like any other European Cup, Junior European Cup. And I think it's because we planned well. We used some clear processes of how we would look after their loading into the event, how we would stagger their intensities, how we would ramp up their volume and then drop it down at the right times. And as a result, I think that took away that nervous pressure that you usually get. I think the pressure came off us, and it more became, you know, it came because of the athletes and internal pressure on themselves. So there was a massive difference in that. Like, I'm always nervous. I'm always got a little bit of that, but it was slightly different for this. I think we'd done the work and knew that we'd get performances. It didn't matter if we got results at that point. We knew we'd get performances.
Yeah, that's interesting to hear. There's a bit of a theme been coming out, actually, from all of these interviews so far, where the importance of normalizing a big occasion is showing its impact in certain situations. So, like with Kate, we were talking about World and Olympic finals, and having the faith that your processors are right, and that you know what you, that you know you've done the work to get yourself to be there. You know you deserve to be there, and sort of almost demystifying the big occasion, respecting it and appreciating it, but demystifying it and falling back on your principles and your experience. Really, that seems to be one of the key themes that's running through this, and the way that coaches try and manage their athletes in these events.
Yeah, and I think that's really important in terms of when you understand that as a coaching team. I think we kind of solidly understand that we can start to do that. It's so different, athletes. So this is my experience from as an athlete, and then as a and working with the, you know, working with the players and the fighters. As a fighter, when I was a fighter, you couldn't normalize stuff for me. It was difficult. But you had to work hard to get me to that point where it was close. It wouldn't have been normal. Like, going into the games, going into any worlds, it was always a bit different. But it was the job of the coaches to get me to that point as close as possible. And I think my realization on the day with Kelly became that I needed to bring her back to that moment of, this is just about judo. So I think that at the start of the morning, one of the moments, like, one of the things I didn't always feel that people done that well enough with me as an athlete. So in the morning, like just before our first fight, I had a chat with her, and I won't recite the whole talk, but it was a lot around what makes a champion. And I spoke to her about, a champion is not the person who stands on the top of the roster at the end of the day and has gold. I said to her that a champion is the person who applies himself each and every day, who does the work, who does all the processes to do the right thing to deliver their best performance. And that she'd done all that. And that whether she walked out there and went out first fight, or whether she walked out there and won gold, she was still going to be a champion. And now it's just about when we walk through at that moment. And I apologize now, just before I carry on, my daughter screaming in the background, obviously stuck in the house of the girls every day, taken its toll. So when she walked through the tunnel, it was to be that this is just like how you've performed every Junior European Cup. Walk through here and deliver the way you've been delivering all year. And if you walk out of having done that, I'm happy, you're happy, who cares? And I think at that moment, it started to normalize it a little bit for her. I could visibly see her relax a little bit. Taking that pressure away from her, it almost helped. And I spoke to her at the end of the day, and she said she felt like it was a really important moment to help her to cope with what's coming.
So you're going out to the final now. You're in that. You're in your suit. You're ready to go. You've had successes along them few days as part of a team. I mean, it was a great Junior European Championships to be a part of in terms of people delivering their best performance, like you're saying there. You're going down. You're walking down towards the chair. What are you thinking? What are you feeling at that point, Colin? Like, this is, you're back into a European final as a coach now, and are you nervous? Are you, how are you feeling? What are you doing there?
There's a massive contrast here in that the feeling is the same. You walk through, you walk into the chair, you've got a nervous feeling in your belly, and you're starting to worry about what could happen and the thing. And you do the same thing. I do the same process. We have a clear start pattern. How is she going to start the fight? What am I going to say after the first exchange to reinforce and deliver what we've discussed? And I've done very similar. I've gone quite narrow with the athlete, with Kelly, like with the fighter, in terms of this is what we're going to do, this is how we're going to deliver it. And she's clear, we're clear. The difference comes, the massive difference comes from when I was a fighter, the moment I got my hands on the kit, all those nerves went. So I like to think that when I sit my bum on the chair, all those nerves are gone, but they ain't gone. They sit there in your belly. And each exchange, they sit there and they get worse. And then if the score goes up, it gets worse. So welcome out to the European final. Like, it was one of, I think the girl was one of three girls that had beaten Kelly all year. So I knew it was a proper fight. I knew it was going to be, you know, one of the toughest fights she had all day. But at that moment, I want those nerves to go because I want to be clear. And I think as the tension rises in the fight, I started to get clear. Yeah, that's the real contrast in that there's a, it just doesn't go away.
Me and Kate was talking about that walk from when you leave the tunnel to the chair. Is just like a surreal sort of feeling. And like it's, like I said, I just want to sort of transport to the chair instantly because it feels very sort of self-conscious at that point. And like I'm nervous, but I know I've got a job to do. Do you know what I mean? But I always think, oh, just get me to the chair. And then that's when the job starts. It's kind of a bit of a no man's land, but I don't know if you feel the same. Kate sort of described it as the same. She sort of feels like, oh, wow, let's get to the chair and get the job done. But I don't know how that feels for you.
What? No, I'm different. I love the walk. The walk's like, I'm walking out of fight. I'm like, I'm out. Like, it might sound egotistical, but like, it's like, we're going into battle together. We're going out to fight together. Like, I'm going to fight from the chair. You fight in the middle and we'll fight together. So when I'm walking on the walk, I'm like, I'm doing the deep breaths like I would do if I was about to walk on the mat. So I'm still doing that bit. Knowing that I'm hoping that what I want to do is my confidence and my stride and my posture and my demeanor transfers to them in that they see me as he knows I can do this. He believes in me. And that confidence when you come out, whether I'm behind, whether I'm side by side, it depends how they let you out at different places. But I want them to see me like I'm coming with you. I'm walking with you. We'll go together. And so I find it actually really nice. I find that bit really nice. The hardest part I find is just sitting my bum in a chair and not jumping up for a few minutes. But you know, I have to keep working on those bits. But yeah, I like that part. I don't know. It's a bit different for me.
I think I'm sort of too keen to want to get the action done. Do you know what I mean? That sort of bit between is like, oh, this is a waste of time. I just want to walk straight into the chair, start the fight. And with like 100% know what you mean. I'm you're there, you're fighting together, ain't you? You're in the chair, you're doing this journey with the athlete now. And yeah, posture, it's important. You've got to look you've got to look like you've won the fight with them. And yeah, it's just that little bit of like, this is a waste of my time. I want to get in a chair. I want to fight. And I think that's what the discussion with Kate was sort of edging on, as in, this bit's annoying me. I want to go, okay, this is the game plan. Bosh, let's go. I'm in the chair and I'm doing it, rather than that sort of walk in between. But I get what you mean. Like, I get totally what you mean, as in, you're a team, ain't you? And you're, but yeah, for me, that it's just a waste of like, oh, that little walk is just a waste of time. But yeah, I know, and I've seen you do it. Like, obviously, I've seen you do it 100 times, and yeah, to me, you look confident. And if that's what you're trying to deliver, then yeah, I think you're doing it well at that point.
I do wonder if the differences that you guys feel between it. So Denny and Kate were quite similar in their feelings around that walk to the mat, whereas you quite enjoy it. You're quite confident with it, Carl. I wonder if that's maybe because you're not quite so far removed from actually fighting yourself as those two are. Like, those two haven't competed for a much longer period of time than you have, and so maybe that's an effect on it as well. I'm not really sure, but it's an interesting one to sort of hear your different reactions to it, really.
I probably think I'm worried about getting injured on the walk over there.
that's a common problem for you, for sure.
I think it's interesting, the point there, the bit about when Denny touched on, like, getting the fight over, like, getting there, let's get it going. I think what happened, why I embrace the being in the chair, that bit where, I don't know, slightly different perspective, is that sometimes when I was an athlete, you know, when I was a fighter, when I was competing, I felt like I wanted to get fights over and done with. And it meant that I would just take, and this is probably where, from being risk-taking to no risk-taking came from, I'd take stupid risks and be happy within myself that I tried. I could rationalize myself. Oh, you tried? No, you didn't. You just tried to get rid of the fight. You just tried to get rid of that person quickly. Whereas you knew if you stayed in the fight, you had the potential to win the fight. You just had to dig in. So that moment as an early kid, like early years, when I was a young senior, I changed that whole mindset. So I kind of embraced the whole experience. So I slow walked out when I was a competitor. I slow walk out when I'm a coach. Like, Denny will know this, if you ever walk out with Stuart Mawat, you're about 35 paces behind him because he's like a bullet to the mat. Like, but I always slow walk it out because I just try and relish the experience. And I think that's probably where it comes from. But it is interesting. Like, maybe it is linked a little bit to the fact that I've competed recently. And I suppose for Kate, the tour's changed massively. Like, I don't, you know, if you go back to Belgium Open, they were shouting your name out from the crowd and you just walked over and came on the mat. You now go through a tunnel, you now get your kit checked. There's these whole new processes on the tour. And I'm not sure if you'd have done that much of that yourself then, like where you have to go through the tunnel, maybe a little bit, but not as much because you'd have been going through the tunnel through to the medical bay. So it'd be a bit different. But
so, okay, you're in the chair now, European final. You just told me you have a problem with sitting your bum down. So what are you thinking? What are you feeling at this point? And Jimmy started. Go.
First exchange, I try and sit back. Piece of really good coaching advice from Matt at one point, where sometimes I'd sit forwards and I'd be engaged in the fight because I've walked to the mat like that, like I've just described. I've walked to the mat. I'm in for the fight. I'm in. And I'd sometimes sit forwards and I'm engaged in the fight. So what I try and consciously do a little bit of is to sit back in my chair a little bit, sit back and watch the first exchange. I'm not going to coach at this point because there's nothing I can say. Like, they're about to just fight the first exchange. And I try and watch it. And what I just try and spot for is, did she deliver on what we wanted to deliver? And how did it go? If it delivered and it went well, we reinforce it for the second exchange. If it went so-so, we would probably say the same thing, reinforce it for the next exchange. And I think for the first exchange in that fight, if I can remember rightly, Kelly dominated the first exchange, got a good attack in, knocked her down. So come back to the line, it was the same message. Reinforce the same message, get back on the grip, lead it how I want to lead it, and go again. And I remember being really relaxed after watching the first exchange. I was really confident anyway. I felt like the loss earlier in the year could have gone either way. But I felt like Kelly was really on it that day, like properly on it. She was properly in. So, and when someone's won that many finals, confidence is just through the roof. But yeah, I remember just sitting back and thinking, okay, same again, let's go again.
Tell us a little bit more about the fight and sort of how it planned out. We obviously know she won, but yeah, tell us the fight and the journey and how she won and what you're feeling and how you greet her when she comes off as a winner. Is there any difference between she comes off as a loser, as a winner, do you know, these things?
Yeah, I don't talk to the losers when they come off, just winners. No, I'm joking. Of course I do. No, I've always been really like, I'm probably more somber a little bit when they lose. I'm not going to lie. I try and act very similar. I never give them anything negative. I never hammer them at that point. But I'm probably a little bit somber. Usually, because I'm kind of mimicking their mood a little bit at times, they're a bit somber. And I don't want to be like really positive at that moment. But I never really give them any negatives. But in the fight itself, like, it only lasted a good two or three, maybe two exchanges. I think she won the first exchange and the second exchange, obviously, the girl fell into the strangle. And do you know what? It's a difficult one to celebrate that because, A, obviously, it was Go Senator's daughter. I know Go very well. I used to coach at Dartford for a long time ago, and it was his wife in the chair. And also, Kelly and I are quite good friends. They've known each other for a while. So it was really difficult. She actually obviously knocked her out on the strangle. And so it's kind of a moment of celebration, but then like a kind of reserved moment, because I think within our sport, we still be very humble. Like celebrating a big hip on or a big win is okay. But then if someone's obviously maybe at risk of being hurt and she's in the situation she could have been, it was that moment. Then my kind of initial reaction was concern. I was a little bit concerned for whether she was okay. And yeah, when she came off, I to be honest, I never know what to do at this point when they've been winners. They walk off and some of them want to give you a cuddle, some of them just give you a high five. There's so many different things that go on. So do you ever have that moment where you have that awkward moment when you meet someone and you're not sure if to handshake them, kiss them or cuddle them or what, like to meet them? So at that moment, it's the same thing when they're coming off. I'm thinking, what are they going to do? Are they going to, I think we're going to put my hand out, I'm going to get my hand crushed against my belly or what's going to happen? But yeah, I think she came off, I remember she gave me a big hug. And yeah, I'm just going into the bit like about treating them the same. Like I do try and like, I give them a moment when they lose, I give them a time to reflect. And after that, then try and talk about positives. You know, you can talk about Kelly's Worlds, where I felt she fought as well at the Worlds as she did at the Europeans. I thought her performance against the German was spot on, but you know, the result went the other way. And I remember sitting with Kelly afterwards and saying to her, remember my speech before the Europeans about champions. It doesn't change here. It doesn't change. This is actually exactly the same. You haven't won today, but you're still a champion because of how you apply yourself, and your performance was great. It just didn't go your way. Okay, we move on, we develop, and we keep moving forwards.
So the day's done. You have a European champion, which is great to hear the national anthem. And the team was such a big part of that. I mean, looking up and you had the British flag on the seat and all the support was there from the external families and the guys that fought over the week. How are you feeling, Cole? Like you've pressure's off now. Is it a weight off your mind? I mean, does it all catch up with you now, or are you too elated? Like, where are you emotionally? Where are you at the end of the day?
It's another great comparison. When I was an athlete and a coach, the athlete is a coach. I've had this as a coach. Do you know what? It's so much nicer, and I don't even know why it's nicer. When I was a fighter and I won my major medals and I won my significant medals, That night I felt empty. I had this like empty feeling of, I don't know, like it was, I just achieved something brilliant. And in the moment that I achieved it, I was overjoyed. The next kind of 7, 8, 9, 10 hours, all the well done's and all the little bits that come with it, I just felt like I had to go again. You never got time to relish the success or relax on it almost, like, because you knew that in 4 weeks' time he was fighting again. And even for something like Europeans, it was difficult to come away from the Europeans with silver and like people were like gobsmacked with what I'd achieved. I probably was myself. And yet still felt like I had to go again. Then he just pointed at himself. So
No, I was I was making a behind the scene comments, and I was shocked as well.
Yeah. So I knew that was going on. But
I like to think I was one of them people that put you down and drove you to winning that medal, Carl. It was sort of secret coaching I was doing.
Yeah. Well, I always talk about this as an athlete. Those key moments when I was an athlete, it came when people looked at me and were like, "You ain't gonna do that. You ain't gonna achieve this." So at that point, I kind of like, "All right, we'll see. I'll show you." Like, it was those moments that really, I love proving people wrong. Like, I'm a stubborn git. Like, I'm stubborn. I love proving people wrong. So,
because obviously I've sort of grown up with you. We're the same age. You're a bit older, obviously, but in the same environment. And you obviously hear the things that people say, and I have heard the things that people say. But do you know what? I knew how hard you trained. I knew you was more than what you was more than what you delivered on the mat at the time. But what you delivered on the mat was perfect, in the sense it was you giving the best performance that you could deliver, and that was what I thought was so great about you, that you had all this, people were expecting it to be sort of a world of technical excellence, but no, actually you found a way to win, and I think you did so well at doing that. Yeah, like, you was tactically great, and you all these processes, and I know you probably put yourself down a little bit, as in this whole technical thing and people saying this stuff about you, but I've seen you on the mat deliver sessions where it's technically good, but the way you fought was perfect to what you wanted to deliver and perfect to what was needed. I joke around with you and say you're life's biggest overachiever, but I think that's you have a great will to win and a great, like you say, you want to win everything, don't you? You're quite passionate in that sense. It's annoying for me, but like, I like to see it. And I always see it as when I was sort of training alongside you.
Yeah, it's annoying for you. It's annoying for me. Like, at school, I was hated. Like, even from the age of 12 through to now, I'm probably hated now. But through to now, like, I had to win. And it was like, there was a lot of stuff. It's what I do slightly different as a coach. I do try and coach to bring out a broader scale of things for everyone. I want to find what's the solution for them. But I think as you get towards the end of your career, you find something that works, you go with it and you hammer it, and you keep hammering it until it's so good that it's world class. And yeah, I mean, touching on what I was talking about, the empty feeling as an athlete and the difference as a coach. As a coach, I feel so much better. And I don't know whether it's because suddenly the winning's not just about me. Don't get me wrong, I'm not going to lie. It is a little bit about me. I want to win with them as well. I want to be part of their success, and I want them to feel like I'm part of their journey with them and part of their success, and I want them to understand that I want them to achieve as much as they do. It's probably not fully true. There's probably an element in there where they'll believe that they always want to achieve more, but for me personally, I'm desperate for the success of any of the, you know, any of the fighters I work with. And as a whole, in terms of after the Europeans, I think what was really great, one of my favourite things about Europeans, was the fact that me and you were both out on the same day walking out with an athlete for a medal match. And you got to hand it to Yaz the day before. She hadn't had the best of years. She's juggling 30,000 different A-levels and trying to get everything in her life all together and crammed in there. But I think because of the team and the way the confidence within it, and what we've driven through the year in the EDS program about being a team in an individual sport is massive. Being a team is really important. It made such a difference to help Kelly, help Lachlan. It makes such a difference when people around you are being successful and driving you. So the feeling as a coach has been much more satisfying. I had it twice. I had it, Europeans was great. And then obviously at Junior Worlds, when me and Matt were probably out there on the last day under a shed load of pressure ourselves, and probably Matt was feeling it more than me. because we'd not had the best of Europeans and we were struggling at the Worlds to get a performance together. We had some good performances, but no results. For Shelley at that point to come through and win, you know, was fantastic. And I think probably you felt the same way from back home because you worked with Shelley for so long as well. But at that point, it's a much better feeling. I don't know why. I think because when you're a coach, I don't even know how to guess at this, but as a coach, I think that sharing in someone's success and seeing them be happy, you just live with that feeling. That's the only feeling you have. You live with their happiness feeling and you take that with you. Whereas when you're as an athlete, you start to have all these other internal thoughts and all these other things that are going on.
I suppose the other element of it is that that one athlete isn't all you've got to think about through the event or for the next period of time. When you're an athlete yourself, like, it's an individual sport. While we all work together as a team, you're thinking mainly about yourself and trying to do the best for you, aren't you? Whereas as a coach, you're thinking of the athlete in front of you at that time. But once that athlete's day is done, you're not dumping them out of your mind, but you've got the other athletes or fighters to look forward to watching them compete or helping them achieve what they need to achieve. So I suppose it's interesting, and just like the focus is wider than yourself, which is possibly why you don't need to linger on it and then find yourself dipping off the high, because there's always something else.
Yeah, I think that's fair, Chris. I think that's probably a subtle difference. The small differences that make big differences. When you start, yeah, I think that you're right. You can start to spiral into yourself internally, and then you'll start thinking about the next event. Whereas I move off that happiness and joy that person's experienced and move on to the next person who has to then go and deliver the same way. So, yeah, it's probably that probably falls into it quite a lot.
So obviously, Cole, you're getting these athletes at a certain stage of their career from the ages of sort of 18 to 20. There's obviously a huge amount of work that goes on before you get them, isn't there? So, what do you have to say to the coaches that have developed that athlete and are then handing them over to be part of the World Class Performance Program?
Yeah, it's sometimes a shame, I suppose. In that there's a lot of fantastic coaches out there. You know, I talk about Kelly a lot in this podcast, but the work that Fitzroy's done with her over several years, longer than I've worked with her, and he still has a great relationship with her, is massive. And from the club coaches to the England coaches to me, I have to be really thankful for. I talked a bit about my journey from athlete to coach, being able to work in the GB program and leading and coach from there. But at the same time, I have to be thankful for the coaches that put in a lot of hours that are maybe not as well paid in some regards, maybe a lot of volunteer time with some coaches, and then a lot of work gets done through the England program to deliver these athletes in a position that we can take them on to be successful. And I think that within our system, ultimately, there's a lot of financial stuff that comes around in terms of we can take them to these events, we can take them abroad, and we can take them on. We can bring them into a centre where they can be amongst some of the best athletes in the world, amongst some of the best support staff in the country, and amongst some of the best coaches in the country. And that opportunity for the athletes and the fighters that we have is an opportunity they don't want to turn down. And probably it's the right thing. I think from that moment, what's a real, you know, skill you have to, you know, you have to have, and also an honest amount of respect for the work that people have done, is to keep in communication with those coaches where you can. You know, me and Fitz talk quite a bit. We don't always see eye to eye on everything. We have different discussions, and but that's a good thing. It's a positive thing. We have the way that we see the world is different, which is fine. And it usually means we come down to discussion and conversation. And sometimes he gets his way more than me, and sometimes I get my way more than him, I suppose. And sometimes we're on the money together and we decide together what's best for Kelly. And yeah, it's a great position I'm in, to be fed athletes that have got some of the work ethic, like people like Kelly, like people like Lachlan, who works with Denny, like people like Mike. And we've got a number of athletes on our program now. I could name all the ones I'm working with. I mean, we've picked well, but we've had a good pool to pick from, which has been great.
Yeah, and from my point of view, I think it's really sort of joyous to be able to pick from a great selection of athletes that are coming from all sort of different places, all different home nation programs that all have sort of different skill sets and been on different journeys that we can go, okay, we like this athlete for this reason and we've selected them for these reasons. And yeah, we get them for their sort of junior under 23 career and we sort of push them through from them. But yeah, massive respect goes out to the guys that are keeping these kids from when they're 5, 6, 7s walking through the door and keeping that intrinsic motivation and these athletes going and going and going until they reach us. That I think it should be sort of said more. And yeah, this is just an opportunity for us to say, like, thank you for that work and thank you. And please keep it up because it's amazing the athletes we're getting through the door.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, without the home nations clubs area coaches, we wouldn't have athletes to turn into the world-class fighters that we now are able to put into the IGF Tour. So, yeah, absolutely. These people, their effort is hugely appreciated by everyone in the program. And without them, we wouldn't have one. I'll, on that note, I think it's as good a time as any to wrap up. Colin, thank you so much for joining us again. It was great to hear some of your experiences, both an athlete and as a coach. And also good to see a little bit of the sort of way you two bounce off each other as a coaching team. So I hope everybody's staying safe and locked up in your household, and we'll catch up soon.
Excellent. Thanks, Chris. It's been great.
Thank you, guys.